You're listening to the Doctor Who podcast from Castoris. My name is Christian Corley. With me is James McLean, and we are here to discuss the fifth episode of Doctor Who Flux, Survivors of the Flux, in which loads of things happened. I mean, I enjoyed it, and I was, I've been back into my insisting on utter silence while Doctor Who is on, which hasn't really been a thing over the past couple of years. But I did feel as though there was a bit of a throwing everything at the wall sensation to this episode. Am I alone in that?
I think I'm probably on the same page as you.
Right.
I think is the answer. Yeah.
It's like there was a little bit too much going on and too many things being just happening and a lot of cutting. Go on.
I was just going to say I can forgive that sort of stuff for Act One. When you're building things up and you want to sort of show multiple threads. But by your penultimate episode, you kind of want to feel everything is in play and everyone knows where it's kind of going, obviously with a few twists, hopefully here and there. But I was kind of hoping for something which was more on the tracks. This felt like it was... I hate to say it, it felt a bit Doctor Who, as it's been for a while, where there's just... too much stuff and not enough episode to do it all justice.
Too much stuff and not enough episode. I like that.
I mean, there was good stuff in there. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying it wasn't good, but I didn't feel it was doing the same job as the rest of the last four episodes have done.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
and I think where it is as well makes a difference, because obviously the first episode was doing a lot of jumping around too. But I think you can do that early on. As I say, I just think it's a little difficult. I think it's a little hard on the audience to be doing it later on. And there was stuff in there which perhaps didn't need to be there.
And
that would have meant it.
I was going to say, what did you feel was not necessary?
The Grand Serpent storyline.
Right.
I think you could have done a reveal on him episode 6 or end of this episode. It felt like that was the sort of thing you do in an A arc. And in this, it was like a C arc or a D arc. And as soon as you've got that in there, you're taking away from the space for everything else to flow and feel comfortable.
I was going to say, let's have a look at the Grand Serpent thing, because last time we saw the Grand Serpent, he was like doing something dodgy and Vinda was wanted to expose him or report him, whistleblower, whatever. And I think we kind of gathered from that he had been unsuccessful. But some dialogue in the episode suggested that he had been successful, because there was some line about... The problem with this is where things sort of get into a bit of a quagmire with when things are taking place. But I'm pretty sure there was a line that he said he used to like command a following or whatever. And that would put him... as to having a time travel ability and having escaped from whatever trouble he'd been placed into courtesy of Vinda, but Vinda had been punished anyway. So there's that aspect to it. And we've said, there is a lot going on. It deserves a lot of consideration. But also, there is obviously this side issue of there's probably too much going on. But the problem with... there's a huge problem with the Grand Serpent, isn't there? And it's almost... It's impossible to ignore the fact that if not actually the master, then he's been played very much like being the master.
Yeah, that's true.
So we already have a master, as far as we know, and maybe he is, maybe he isn't, maybe he's a different character entirely, but he's too similar to the master, I think, especially with a snake thing going on.
The snake thing. Why would the snake thing?
Well, because the master...
Am I missing something?
Well, the master was a...
Oh, what? Because he turned...
Yeah,
snake in the eighth... Okay. I not really considered him being the master. That would make a lot more sense and perhaps benefit the story so far as if you're going to shut down the universe, you'd really want to know what he's up to. At the same time, I kind of liked the Grand Serpent as just a bit of world building.
Yes.
That, you got to see Vendor's world, Vendor's politics, and the Grand Serpent was big in his time for probably about 40 years, and then, someone else would take over. And that was just a pocket moment. And I think it's a kind of a shame to sort of make that such a big tab in this story. But yeah, I mean, I'd probably get behind it more if it was the master, not because I wanted to be the master, just because it would kind of make sense in terms of the flux. That we know what the Daleks are doing, we know what the Cybermen are doing. Maybe you do need to know what the master's doing. And the master obviously has a link to the division, so it would also kind of make sense to bring him back just to wrap that up in terms of next week, because he obviously has a big part to play in that. So maybe you're right. Yeah, I don't mind that. I mean, I saw on Twitter people saying that watch out, you're going to find that Belan Vinder's baby is the Doctor, and that's going to be the twist. And I don't buy that.
No.
I buy the Master more, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, if that's the case, I can see why it's so important to put him in the episode. But as it was, the Rise Through Unit didn't tell me anything regards to the Flux. It didn't inform the Doctor's story in the Flux. It didn't inform what's gone for the last four episodes in the Flux. It didn't even inform the stuff that's gone on with Vinder in the Flux. It's all just been a sort of like a brand new arc that's sort of been dropped in. And it just feels like, because it didn't inform anything that was going on before. So if it informs episode six, that helps. But otherwise, it didn't speak to Vinder's story with the Grand Serpent in the Flux. It didn't speak to the Doctor and the Flux. It didn't speak to any aspect of the story that's gone so far. Learning how he wove his way into UNIT tells us nothing about the story that we're watching. It feels like something you might have as a webisode,
Yes.
to sort of complement a revelation you find in episode six or at the end of episode five. How did the Grand Serpent become in control of UNIT? That's fairly interesting, but it's not about the story of the Flux. So that kind of annoyed me, and it seems to have caused ripples on the Twitterverse in regards to.
The unit dating thing has been attributed to the Grand Serpent's meddling, apparently.
Yes. Paul Cornell was saying something along those lines,
We'll
that
see, right.
time has been changed. I mean, you've got Sontarans in the Crimea and everything else, so you've got to assume that things are fluid.
Absolutely, and what I'm going to do, I'm going to change the schedule of our usual format. Format, I said format like we have a format, which isn't just two folks talking. And I'm going to go into Facebook now. Okay, so last
Sure.
night I said, it's time to tell us your thoughts about Survivors of the Flux. Lewis David Blaney said, a beautiful blend of old and new. Which is, kind of get that. I do wish, however, the angel stayed a little longer with Han Solo, I mean the Doctor, trapped for longer as an angel. It was wonderful seeing Kate Stewart and the continuation of the narrative set up in the Timeless Children. Feeling very Marvel cinematic, somewhere between Loki and What If via PlayStation's Uncharted series. Just on the matter of Kate Stewart, I have been. I think the word is unimpressed by Gemma Redgrave as Kate Stewart in every single appearance prior to last night. I thought she was marvellous last night, and she was only in it for about 30 seconds. So I don't know if
She
that's
was
in the writing or the
good, yeah.
motivation or what.
Probably the right. Well, the character has always been a bit of a cipher, as the Brigadier was. So you're really down to what the actress can or actor can make of the character. So yeah, I think they gave her something. Well, I don't know. I mean, she had quite a big part, didn't she, in Time and the Doctor?
Yeah, so I'm not sure why that is,
In
but
terms of dramatic, yeah. No, she was good. Yeah,
it's fine.
as I say, I thought I think all the people on the board played their parts well.
Yeah, well, it is a board, isn't it? I was going to say this. It is an episode of chess, of putting all the pieces into position for the final episode, isn't it? That is basically what
Yeah.
happened. Aaron Hollins, after the higher Excellent episodes last week. This did feel like a bit of a come down. Overall, I was entertained and did enjoy it, but I didn't. But it didn't pack quite the punch of some past episodes of Flux. That's pretty much what we were saying earlier. Trevor Arthur, this was the fifth part of the longest trailer for what has to be the greatest ending of a Doctor Who story, or it'll be the greatest anticlimax. Hoping the Watch and Baddie Cooperative don't combine to fabricate a fast solution and reset to our universe. Brilliant so far. Please don't mess it up. That, I mean, last week's cliffhanger was quite an astonishing one. So to end this week's show with sort of the entire Sontarans surrounding the Earth was kind of, I mean, that, you know, it refers back to what I was saying earlier about just throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. But I mean, it was a good moment. I feel like it could have been a little bit stronger on the visual, but it was quite exciting to see the Sontarans attempting to invade the Earth at such scale.
Yeah, it was nice because I was half expecting a Dalek to appear, and it was nice to have something not a Dalek in the new series taking on the Earth again. So, yeah.
Trevor Arthur, that was so Jonathan Roberts. Hello, Jonathan Roberts. Very much enjoying the Flux arc. It still feels fresh each week. Trust the Sontarans to turn up when no one can defend themselves. Typical of the Spud-faced characters. Anything with Barbara Flynn is a most welcome bonus. We'll come onto that in a moment. Brad Bourne, unwatchable garbage. Daniel Edwards, I'm sorry for, but whatever this is, it is not Doctor Who. Too many ideas packed in. Terrible retconning of the Doctor's origins and just bad storytelling. Nick Caulfield.
Wait, sorry, that is surely that is Doctor Who. Doctor Who has always done terrible retconning of itself, and it's always had a muddled story. I mean, that to me is the essence of what I see when people say Doctor Who, they tend to mean, maybe I'm being presumptuous, the original series. And I think this is at the moment very much the original series, more so than the new series, maybe. I'd imagine new series people perhaps be more disgruntled with the format. But that's me. And yeah, it's a shame you didn't enjoy it.
Yes. Nick Caulfield. Hello again, Nick. I guess I should have predicted Barbara Flynn. He made some predictions last week. I'm sure others did. Enjoyed it. Yaz, Dan, and Jericho, particularly. I may need to go back and remind myself how they got from China to Liverpool, though. Looking forward to next week. I mean, they were the kind of the main part of the episode, I felt. They were the bits that I wanted to watch. I didn't really want to watch.
Yeah.
I like Vinder, but once we'd established where he was, I wasn't that interested in what was going on there. I wasn't really. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Timeless Child thing anyway. I mean, it's there, so there's nothing I can do about it. But I didn't find that what was happening with the Doctor and who turned out to be Tech Tune, Barbara Flynn's character, was top of my list of priorities. I really wanted to know what Yaz and Dan and Jericho were doing.
I was mixed with the Yaz, Dan, and Jericho because, for me, and again, this is all very subjective, isn't it? Very little of the humour paid off for me. It didn't land.
Right.
So the comedy didn't. The style, I like the style. I like the vibe. I like the aesthetic. I like the sort of old school adventurer genre that they were playing off. I thought that was nice. Occasionally, I was thinking, is this really adding to anything? Again, it's not that I don't think that could have been made into a story, but when you realize that a show is doing multiple things at a time, you kind of start thinking, what could it be doing less of to help other bits work? And what could other bits, what do other bits need to work? And there was times in theirs where I was feeling a bit, I don't know. I mean, one of the things that got me was, and it's a very tiny niggle, but when you strand three people in a quantum event, and then the next episode they're just wandering around Earth. Now you make the logical assumption that that quantum event's just being put back on Earth,
Yeah,
but you kind
yes.
of feel like when you've left that as part of your cliffhanger that the Doctor's been taken away into an angel, they're left stranded in a quantum realm with a load of angels, and then it's not mentioned again.
Yeah.
You feel I felt a little shortchanged there. I kind of
Yes.
felt like I just feel that needed an acknowledgement, not because I couldn't make the jump, but just because you were making me make the jump, that I needed something there to sort of say, yeah. I don't know. It kind of felt like a magician getting the hat and saying, I'm about to pull a rabbit out of the hat here, and you go, ooh, and then it goes, right, and here's some flowers from my coat. And it's like, well, what happened to the rabbit in the hat?
Yeah,
And you
yeah.
go, oh, It would have come out. You know that. You've seen this sort of act before, and you go, yeah, I know, that's probably what happened. But I'd like to have seen the rabbit come out. I know maybe I'm making it into a bigger thing than it was, but it did feel a little bit. And again, it's like the Weeping Angels thing. It's like, okay, yeah, a nice scene. Feels like something that would make the cutting floor to me. Maybe an extra on a DVD with her in the Weeping Angel realm. Ultimately, at this point of the story where you're accelerating the story, kind of want that. And these little pockets of things which just don't tell you anything. I don't know, maybe I'm just starting to sound like a terrible editor, but I just kind of had the urge to get the clippers and go, clip that out, put it on the deleted scenes, and then give the adventure story more space to breathe, or give more space for the division to look big and powerful. That's kind of where I felt that the show was making its mistakes, is that it wasn't everything I've seen it do before felt like it was relevant. And if it didn't feel like relevant, it felt like it was leading to something relevant. And in this episode, there were just bits where I was like, I just didn't feel this is relevant. But yeah.
Yeah,
So what did other people say?
I got to the end of the list there, so if anyone else has any
Oh.
comments to add, we won't be able to read them out in this week's podcast, that is for sure. So we should probably talk about the chap in the tunnels as well, because
Okay.
that's kind of been building up, hasn't it? And them being the trio being stuck in the early 20th century, I did expect them to sort of end up in Liverpool at some point, to be honest. But with the tunnels apparently all leading, or that's this sort of like central point of the tunnels, with the tunnels all leading to places that I wasn't expecting any of that, which I do at this stage, and it's not, and we can say this about any of the things that have happened so far, and most of it's been explained quite well, but at this point it does feel like a bit of a kind of just a device, and it doesn't have any sort of real kind of sort of
Yeah,
thinking behind it, you
so
know what I mean? It feels a bit MacGuffin-y rather than something tangible in the story.
maybe what I'd have done in this episode, and it's easy for me to say because I've not been smart enough to pull together an entire show, so forgive me for backseat driving on this, but it feels from watching it, what I'd have done with this episode is I'd have ejected the Weeping Angels, I would have ejected and rewritten the unit stuff to being maybe a scene with the Brigadier having concerns, and then a scene confrontation with the Grand Serpent and the reveal of who he is as the Grand Serpent. And then what was left, that might have only just given me like 2 to 3 minutes, maybe more, 4 or 5 minutes. But I'd have maybe put a couple of pocket scenes in with the guy in the tunnels to sort of to either backstory that a bit. So you could kind of get a more of a feeling of what was started in episode one. There was a bit of a link to that, more of a link to that initial conversation. But something which just made it feel like it the story was leading to that rather than the story just showing that. And I think that's kind of where I felt with the episode, is that there was, like you say, there was bits that came into it which felt like they didn't have enough rooting within story and therefore felt more functional than about continuity. And then there was stuff in there which was continuity, which didn't feel like it was really doing much for the story at that point. And I just wanted it to shoo and go away. So yeah, I think I'd probably put stuff with him in there to sort of build up to him meeting them. And that could have been him sort of going to various places and feeling confused again. It could have been a di you know, like a diary thing that he could have had just to sort of give a feeling that of his existence before meeting them again. Just something was just brought him into the story more, and perhaps gave him his own trajectory, which he'll probably have. I imagine next week we'll have a flashback for him, but I kind of feel if there is, that should have been this week. But
Yes,
yeah.
so and I suppose that takes us then to the position between the universes with
Yes.
this whole idea of James, I've fallen out with you, I want you to die, and to do that, I'm going to destroy the entire cosmos.
Well, I kind of think if you think of it like a video game, and you say Civilization or something, or maybe worse than that, maybe it's a multiplayer game, and you play regularly with another person. and you don't really respect the other person, and you've been playing for years, and it's just got to a point where the universe is just getting a bit fuddled and confusing, and that person's about to sort of reveal the game, your game, and game over. And so you sort of shut it down, and you start moving all your assets to another server, to another version of the game that the people are playing, maybe. I think it's that sort of mentality where you, if we're to get behind this, that's what's going on here. It's someone who has so much power to do whatever they want, they've had it for so long that they don't want to imagine the idea of actually it going wrong for them. So rather than actually see where that plays, they'd rather shut it all down, see quietly, and move all their assets somewhere else so they can start again and be powerful. I think that's kind of what's going on here. And again, that could have been explored more, or if there was a little more space in that area for them to do that. And so you could actually get a little more of the character in there rather than just the exposition, which is what inevitably ended up being, was large exposition dumps about what was going on here, which I liked. I'm insofar as I like the explanation for the flux. I liked the position of the division in that. I think that worked. The idea of jumping universes, I thought that worked as well. I had no issues with that, but again, it did feel like it didn't have the space to breathe as much as it could have. You know, ideally, if this had been like a 10-episode season, you could have had an whole episode of those two, you know, facing off each other on this sort of topic. And you built on that and the issue of the Eude and being imprisoned and exploring the division. In the end, the division ends up being a one-room, one-person deal who reveals the plans. And that's really about it.
Yeah.
And
And there's no
so,
sense of
yeah,
scale to what the
yeah.
division can actually do, although we keep we know that various
Yeah.
people we've encountered have been part of it, and we've seen the Doctor being part of it. There's no real feeling of what they actually have done.
No, and I think, I mean, people have said one of the issues that they've had. I say people because I've been reading a few reviews. One of the legitimate reasons that they had issues is that if you have a clandestine reveal of this thing that's been not just something of the past, but has been continuing to work, is how it's never been visible before. And you've got to say, well, how do you know it's not been visible before? How do you know that the time war wasn't instigated or by them? How to a degree, you know, how do you know that they were not involved in you know, various storylines we've had? You know, were they involved in Bad Wolf? Were they involved in you know, were they the ones who were occasionally flicking the TARDIS towards an event to go and sort out? You know, we saw the, you know, the official Gallifrey CIA doing that sort of stuff. So just because you don't see it doesn't mean in a sense you couldn't graft it into the stories. Now, yes, it's not meant to be grafted into the story. That would be a retcon, but I don't think the fact that we've not seen it means that you can't imagine it wasn't there. I think you've got to see it as I mean, if the Vision is what I'm getting the impression of, is actually a very limited amount of people now, maybe even her, and you've got the whole of time and space to be fucking around in. Why would you know, why would we always see them? Why would it always be linked with the Doctor? The Doctor, what the Doctor does could be seen as small fry compared to what she's doing. You know, I mean, for all you know, all the problems and retcons in the universe that we keep talking about and arguing over, maybe that was them, you know, shifting the game. So yeah, no problems with that. It just felt a bit, as I say, a bit rushed.
Yeah. And am I think they Azure and Swarm, they used the energy from the people that they had around those strange
Yeah.
metallic totems to then fa make their way to the Doctor. Is that how it
Yeah.
happened? Yeah, it wasn't
Yeah,
entirely clear.
they were harvesting their energies to make a rip, tear, tunnel, corridor, pick your Doctor Who, travel transportation, which is fine. I had no problem with that. They were doing it on a big scale. They know what they're doing because they kind of know time and space. Again, I just, yeah, all these things were fine. It just felt too much for one episode. I think
Yeah,
that was my
yeah.
problem.
We've, I
And
mean,
so I
we've
couldn't
essentially
really
got
just sit
five
in.
villains, haven't we? So,
Yeah.
yeah.
And that'll have to play out next week.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, how well has that always played out in the past when you have multiple, in any TV or film, when you have multiple villains? It kind of feels like a story which doesn't need multiple villains. To me, And again, it's so easy to do this when you're not writing it. And so I always feel bad about being that critical, but it kind of feels like maybe Swarm could have been got rid of by now. Maybe that would have been, or maybe
Yes.
Swarm should have been got rid of by Division when they cockily sort of stormed in
Yeah.
as the main villains.
Rather than the
And
other
then
way
she
around.
wipes them out, and then you have your main villain, Division. I don't know. It feels like there's still a lot of pieces in play for just one episode.
Maybe it's not,
But
though. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's going to continue beyond the six.
well, it might do, absolutely. And that'll be fine. I mean, again, I stress, I mean, there was some good stuff in here. It's not, it still felt imaginative. It still felt like the show was trying to break its chains and do different things. I am a little disappointed with the Division so far, as I've said before. I kind of think that it would have been better left in the background rather than faced. And the idea that the Doctor's got a fob watch there with all her memories. I mean, hopefully the whole point of this is that she won't get access to them, because I think again that would just it's just too much. You're trying to mystify the Doctor Who again, the Doctor Who. And you're almost like you're almost resetting it to the same problem that you had before you started the Timeless Children by enshrining everything back into, I just everything else is fine. I mean, I've seen people get angry because they're like Rassilon created regenerations, and this is a retcon. And you think, well, I'm not entirely sure. And correct me if I'm wrong. I don't remember on screen. Maybe they did in Deadly Assassin say Rassilon created regenerations. But even if they did, how many things in history do we know? All we have thought is X, which you later on find was Y, or that has been. I mean, how many leaders have taken appropriation of an idea, an ideal, a philosophy, a theology, to make it about them rather and bury the truth so they become the figurehead. I can get round all that. I suppose what I have an issue with is when I just don't feel satisfied with what I'm given.
I mean, like I think we said this last week. We've got, 20,000 plus years of human civilization, and only the last 1,000 years really is recorded in any sort of substantial way. Everything beyond that, before that, isn't particularly well recorded, save, military records where they've been retained, and things like remains of Roman activities and similar old armies in East Asia and things like that. There's very little beyond the moment when the when really when the Normans came to Britain, and I imagine at some point, I mean, well, we know there were bureaucrats because they created a doomsday book and they went around the country, around the UK, recording everything, and that seems to be kickstarted this whole sort of administrative, because I suppose history is administration in some ways. That possibly takes us back to the division. I don't know.
Well, I think it does. I think we've got to you've got to give. I think in the end, it depends on. I think the question one has to ask is, what does the division give the audience? What does it give Doctor Who? And I think that after this, if it continues, they need to think carefully on that, because if it ends up just being another Gallifrey or another Dalek, then it loses its ability to sort of give anything new. So I am a little concerned they've already watered it down a bit, but we'll see. I don't know. I kind of felt the Division would be something bigger than a person in a room with a nude.
Was that
I
redesigned,
don't
dude?
know. Bother you'd.
Yeah. I felt the eyes looked different.
Yeah, I think there might have been a little tweak. I don't know. I mean, I'd have perhaps. I mean, I rather like the idea of the Weeping Angels always being part of the Division, rather than just being, oh, we take a whole host of basically monsters from wherever we like and get them to work for us. I kind of like the fact that the Division's so old that somehow, the angels are a part of that. And when they go and do things like in Blink, they're just being a bit naughty and taking some food off the side. That would be more interesting, I think. And we kind of lose some of that sort of ability to build on what we know. I mean, I still like to think that the mother Tecton is the woman from End of Time. the mother in there. I mean, people have said, oh, but the doctor looked at her like he knew her, and it's like, well, maybe the doctor does in a weird way know her, but doesn't. I kind of like that idea. I kind of like the idea that the seventh doctor, especially the seventh, other doctors as well, I think maybe you could argue, but certainly the seventh doctor seems to have more knowledge of who he was. Doctor, who are you? And the whole Lady Painforth stuff and the stuff in Remembrance of the Daleks, where they're on the stairs and they're talking about the problems they had with the Hand of Omega. So it almost feels like sometimes maybe the doctor does have memories or latent memories or does know in some regenerations. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know where I'm going with this, but.
No, that's okay. We didn't do a rating last week. I like having ratings.
I know you do.
I'm going to ask you for a rating for last week's episode of Doctor Who. That's the one with the Weeping Angels and the Village of the Angels.
Yeah, I think I'd give it something like 9.5. It was I can't remember many faults in it, to be honest.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I'd give it a 9, I think. And
Yeah.
in contrast, Survivors of the Flux, how are you feeling about that rating
I
wise?
think I'd probably give it about 7.5. I
Right.
mean, it was still good. I mean, I think if it was a normal, if it was done last season or in Moffat's era or even Davis's era, I'd probably thought this was, far better. But I think linked to a larger story and having had four very solid episodes which worked in their place as part of the story, this just felt a little bit too much of a middle, too
Yeah.
near the end for me.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I would probably give it a 7. It's not that I don't
Yeah.
like halves, it's just I would just give it a 7. We're going to move on now. I'm going to try a sound effect. Good-o. A female Doctor Who robs boys of role models, claims Tory MP. Now,
Yes,
a few
yes.
years ago, I said something similar. However, I think it's probably bollocks, to be honest with you now.
Do we have the excerpt of when you said it?
We don't.
No.
I mean, I might find
No,
it,
it's not
but
worth
I
it.
won't. What is he saying here? Nick Fletcher, who's a Tory MP, said, quote unquote, "Female replacements in shows like Doctor Who were robbing boys of good role models. The only characters they had to look up to were gangsters, the Krays, and Tommy Shelby from Peaky Blinders," he said. And I mean, do we know any boys who are watching the Krays in? I mean, I know there's been another movie about the Krays, but I really don't think there's any little boys who know who the Krays are. Well, not outside the East End anyway, and even then, I think we're stretching it a bit.
I mean, he wasn't. I mean, he uses Doctor Who, and he uses it again in the letter that he released. But he also uses other shows as well. I mean, I'm not for a moment sticking up for the point. I think also at the same time, as you say, in context of what he was saying, he was using Doctor Who as one of several shows that he was using to try and demonstrate that there was a removal of male role models in favour of female role models that were thus limiting male children access to television, which again is when you think about it, it's just mad. I mean, how many years has people with traditional values, not necessarily political ones, always said that that TV is bad for your children, or comics are bad for your children, or video games are bad for your children, and now you've got this sort of argument that, well, it's really good for your children because it gives them safe, established role models. And I kind of find it funny that one of the ones he uses is Queen Latifah from The Equalizer. And you think, is Equalizer, is that a good role model for kids? As in terms of the man, rather than, whatever you want to think about the show, what is a good, I mean, I think we said this when you were talking about it a few years ago, what is a good male role model? In some ways, you could argue a good male role model would be a role model that's not male, that gives them sort of tacit values which they otherwise wouldn't get within their group of boys, their friends, their boys that they hang out with. And sometimes you could say that the opposite gender could be kind of good. But yeah, anyway, sorry, I've sidetracked you.
Well, I think there's actually a lot more to it than that. I mean, things like I think children can tell the difference between fiction and non-fiction, whether they're consciously doing it or not. And I think people like, I mean, for instance, when we were children, not that we were children together, but we're the same age, so we've got the same points of reference. I never watched Doctor Who and think, I want to be like the doctor. I might have watched Take Heart or Heartbeat or Think of a Number or any number of Blue Peter and thought, I'd like to be able to do things like what those people are doing. These look like really interesting people, and they're doing really cool stuff, and they're creating amazing things, or they're telling us amazing things. Those are the types of people that I should be listening to. And obviously, it wasn't conscious, but that I was drawn to those people because, you know, and you can watch Tony Hart on YouTube now, and the stuff that he was doing is still remarkable. And you can watch Johnny Ball clips in Think of a Number, and you can watch all Blue Peter things, and it's all manner of things, all very BBC centric. I'm just describing there. We did watch ITV occasionally, but you know what I'm saying is it's fiction and it's non-fiction. I think children know the difference. And the other side of this is, if you want good male role models, you should probably have good male people in your family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's your bottom line, isn't it? Is that whatever your child watches or gets absorbed in, if they've got a strong role models, I don't think the gender is massively important, but if
No.
they've got good people to instill their good values upon them, or help them find their good values or encourage good values, that's far more important than the TV they watched. I'm thinking about when I watched Doctor Who. Yeah, I mean, when I was a kid, I was kind of influenced. I liked the quirkiness of the character. I liked the fun. It sort of gave me a role model that was that taught me maybe that, you should be comfortable with who you are. And I don't think that's changed. I think that's still there. And I would be worried if we are in a society which is so binary that, we can't learn or be influenced by people depending on their genitals is kind of disturbing. And I think of the role models I had when I was a kid, when role models were all male. And I mean, okay, let's take because we've got the adventuring element of this episode, let's take Indiana Jones, who is a terrible role model. I mean, regardless of your question, your feelings of colonialism and of taking material, taking artifacts, regardless of that, whether it belongs in a museum, you've got a guy who, sleeps with one of his students when she's about 16, 15, 16, and he's mid-20s. The whole Marion Ravenwood, if you unpick that, his how he handles her and talks to her when she's sort of saying, even if you feel that that's, not the case and she was older and he was older, okay, let's go with that. Then you've got someone who just totally dismisses her when she's sort of saying, you really, really hurt me. And he's like, look, I said I'm sorry. And you think, is that a good role model? You think, I don't want to pick on Harrison Ford, but I think he shows you some of the role models of the time. You think of Deckard from Blade Runner, who again forces himself on Rachel, who is very withdrawn and enclosed, drinks a lot, can't handle his feelings. Is that a good role model? Even Han Solo is he's not exactly a
No.
perfect guy. And again, pushes Leia into a small cubby hole to see if he could sort of, forcibly get her to admit her feelings. And again, it's not really great stuff, but these were the 80s role models. He was playing the hero characters. I mean, you could argue opposite to that, say Luke Skywalker was actually quite a gentle character, largely. So yeah, it's not all of them were like that. But my point being is that this idea that you've got to have male role models, you've got to say, well, that's a large spectrum, isn't it, of and also what you define, what is a male role model? What is that? What is masculine? I don't know. And what does that necessarily benefit? To do these things, should we just be trying to make people nice people, caring people? Yeah, I don't know. It was a odd thing to say, wasn't it? It was interesting though that it's made you sort of think about some of the things that you were feeling at the time, and where you are at now. I think
Yes.
that's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably a slight softening of my just becoming more mature and softening of my attitudes to things, maybe.
Oh, we just, we learn through experience, don't we?
Well,
And I
that's
think
it,
it's
yes.
good if we can allow the experience to change our values and feelings. That's a good thing, isn't it? That's I mean, if we do have to go with male female roles, could there be better male role models in science in TV? Probably. I don't
Probably,
know. I
yeah. But
can't
I
really
mean,
think.
these days, there's. I mean, I don't. My children
I don't
don't
really
really.
think like that.
Yeah. Well, no, I don't either. I mean, I'm having a struggle to think here. Now, I mean, my children have preferred to watch kind of quirky shows. There's one called The Odd Squad that they like, which is quite amusing. They like watching things like Dick and Dom's Diddy TV, which is very funny. And they've recently been watching. I mean, they've just watched The Wedding of Sarah Jane Smith. They've run the third series of the Sarah Jane Adventures. So, you know, they can't watch what they want because there are rules in place and settings and things like that. But they have a certain type of thing that they watch, and I don't really think any of it is bad. And when it comes to things like YouTube, it's usually factual documentaries that end up on there, or so. And it is a difficult topic, really, the whole
I mean, I would
identification
say
of a.
one
Sorry.
way to make a good, if we're going to talk about male and female as, this sort of binary, one good way surely to make better men, I guess, is to have them have shows which have strong women characters in them. So that, that they can connect to, they can understand, that they can get behind. That can run a show without feeling like, like in James Bond, where the woman is kind of the trophy, isn't she, at the end for his exciting actions, he gets the woman. Perhaps you do need shows where the woman is more than that, and that's what Doctor Who's doing. And surely that is going to make for a more rounded person who can enjoy that as well as being able to go and enjoy James Bond or something else like that. That's what we need. We need television which, gives us multiple experiences of people and of races, and I don't think anyone should be ignored, and I certainly don't think men are underrepresented really even now. So, and yeah, it's a weird thing, isn't it?
Well,
But yeah, I
let's.
think we all everyone would like to have, good positive role models on.
Well, I mean, there's
Television, but
also
I think
this.
it's I think over over, over undercomplicates the human condition, is what I was going to say. Sorry.
Yes, it probably does. I was just going to say it probably also maybe overestimates the importance of television programs as well, and maybe role models is kind of a. I mean, it is. I mean, I don't remember people talking about role models when I was growing up. It seems to be something that's come from sport, and then it's kind of spread everywhere else.
Well, yeah, I mean, role models, I always got the impression, tend to be quite superficial things, sort of fair either. Well, I don't know. I mean, again, I suppose you'd have to unpack what a role model is. But I think you're right. I think ultimately it comes back to what you were saying before, that regardless of your politics, I think it's clear that the most important thing is how those closest to children, whatever family unit that is, whether that's blood family or not, or single or adult, whatever, I think whether well if that's a stable and strong nurturing environment, that's what as a society we should be looking at creating and ensuring that as many children have that in whatever that dynamic is, rather than worrying too much over what they're seeing on television, because you can bet your bottom dollar that anything they get from television will only add as a an ingredient, a spice to whatever is already in the mix from their domestic living. That's how I would see it, but then I'm not a psychologist, so I perhaps but then neither are the politicians, so
Well,
we're
indeed.
even.
I suppose that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. Next week is episode 6 of The Vanquishers, and we'll be back a day after to discuss that. for your audible pleasure or interest, or maybe you're just tired and want to get to sleep. Either way, we'll be here for you in a purely digital and remote pre-recorded sense. Until next time, it's goodbye.